How does Christianity compare with Islam, Mormonism, skepticism, Buddhism, Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, and other world religions? You'll find answers in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about The Christian Difference at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference.
Anybody who's ever been to a bar at 9 p.m. and then again at 3 a.m. knows that alcohol disinhibits people and causes violence. And I don't quite understand why marijuana users have such a hard time getting their heads around the idea that marijuana might be the same.
I'll tell you what women's sins are. Number one, not knowing how beautiful you are. That's what the Dove Campaign for Beauty was about. Number two, not taking time for yourself. Number three, giving too much. These are women's sins.
According to Chrysostom, the priest stands daily at the altar inviting some to communion and keeping back others. You know, so closed communion is, it's a biblical practice. It also is a confessional practice. I mean, our confessions refer to it.
The basis of false doctrine is where our word trumps God's word. Self-justification, our word trumps the judgment of God's law.
Uber drivers around the world love listening to Issues Etc. on demand while we're waiting for a ride request.
Ordinarily, the March for Life in Washington, D.C. gets what I will call muted media attention. They will acknowledge that some anti-abortion activists, sometimes they put it even in the thousands, some anti-abortion activists showed up and marched in Washington, D.C. They will acknowledge that there were groups there, and they will even quote some of the signage that was carried there. But ordinarily, they don't cover it much. This year was an exception. This year, there were several reasons that the media saw fit to cover the March for Life in Washington, D.C. One was Ben Shapiro, and one was a strange, a rather bizarre encounter between some Catholic schoolboys, a group of Black Hebrews, and some Native Americans. Now, that sounds like the beginning of a joke. They weren't walking into a bar. They were in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And, well, it taught us a lesson, as if we needed to be taught that lesson, about the role of social media in the media. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 24th of January. We're going to be spending some time with Terry Mattingly talking about media coverage of the March for Life. A little bit later, Elaine Donnelly, founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness, joins us to talk about the Supreme Court's decision ruling in favor of the President Trump's ban on transgenders in the military. Did not decide the legality of the ban, but simply put an end to the court-ordered stoppage on that ban. We'll find out what that means. Then Pastor Peter Bender, director of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, will be our guest. We'll continue our series on Lutheran catechesis today, The Necessity of the Divine Service. Join us with questions or comments for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC and the Issues Etc. listener comment line 618-223-8382. Joining us to discuss media coverage of the March for Life, Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
You quote David Brooks of the New York Times saying that it is most important to remember these days that the social media tail wags the mainstream media dog. What does Brooks mean?
Well, it's basically something we've talked on the show right now, which is that our media today, since the advertising doesn't work, and everybody to survive as publications has to build up banks of loyal online readers and hopefully loyal subscribers who pay you money for what you're producing. You have to keep those people happy, and you have to try to make more of them. Whereas your traditional newspaper tried to have advertisements that appeal to as many different kinds of readers as possible, which meant you had a financial incentive to try to treat a large number of readers and their interest and their beliefs and their political convictions, you had an incentive, a financial incentive, to treat a lot of people fairly, because then you retained your broad readership and advertising base. But if you take ads out of that, all of a sudden now we live in an age where what you want is to increase the size of your choir, as in the old Southern expression, preaching to your choir. You want to tell people things they already believe and that they already know, and thus social media becomes the fuse on what you hope is a tsunami of clicks, with people clicking your item, forwarding your item, getting people to read your item, and hopefully eventually subscribing to your item. You try to build your loyal readership based on telling them essentially what they already think. The impact of this on American political life and public discourse is something you and I have talked about many times. And oh my gosh, did we see it in this particular episode to a stunning degree, right up there with the Kavanaugh hearings. I can't believe that it's a week later and we're still getting new angles and new information coming out about this. Let me give you an example. Hope you read it at Get Religion. Before you heard about the incident at the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, have you seen that covered anywhere in any mainstream press?
No, not once.
Then let's tell our listeners what I'm talking about. Because right now, this is officially a right-wing story. Now, compared with the incident at the Lincoln Memorial, here is what happened after that. The next night, I believe, there was a mass at the Basilica, which is the official cathedral church that's located on Catholic University of America campus. It's the official home church of the U.S. Catholic bishops. I mean, this is recognized by Rome as the Basilica of the American Church. And they're going to have a mass. Well, up marches this same group of Native Americans. And we now have, it went through like three different levels of reporting, but it's now pretty well established on video and through the testimony of the security guards. And if there are security guards there, having lived in Washington, you know, for 12 years, or in Baltimore and commuted in, I'd bet the moon and the stars that there are security cameras at the doors of the National Basilica, wouldn't you think? So up marched the Native American demonstrators with their drums and everything else, and apparently they attempted to, they beat on the door some, according to some witnesses, and apparently they tried to break in and interrupt the mass, which at the very least would be a misdemeanor of public disruption, you know, of an event, whatever. But does that strike you as a fairly symbolic and important thing to do, to march in with drums and interrupt a mass at the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception?
Yeah, especially after the previous day's events.
Especially after the previous days. So we're right in the middle of the maelstrom of coverage of this, and they show up at the Basilica of the National Immaculate Conception, the National Shrine, and this happens. And I cannot believe that at this point this is not in major media. The Catholic News Agency has covered it, and like I said, a few other conservative places have covered it. But having this confrontation at the National Mall is on the front page of every newspaper in the world. It is judged as a news event of astonishing importance, yet trying to break into the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception or march into it after beating on the doors, that isn't viewed as an event at all that's newsworthy. I would say they're both newsworthy, but I frankly would think the second is of greater hardcore news importance than the first. But it's not getting covered at all.
So you admit that you were kind of an early Twitter adopter when it came to the events that unfolded at the Lincoln
right.
Memorial. Tell us how it came about.
Well, I mean, basically, the Twitterverse lived online over the weekend, in addition to watching blown calls at, you know, at NFL playoff games and whatever else. This was one of the things that blew up on that weekend. I spent a lot of time online, and I think, like a lot of other people, I got sucked in to that first video. It was a short video. It was shot by the video crew accompanying Phillips, the Native American activist, and followed him in. And I, you know, we all have kind of been trained to think that videos don't lie. Well, it's not that the video lied. It's that it was a selective moment from a particular angle, and it didn't show the entire framing of what happened in this event and how this event came about. I wrote a tweet. A lot of people have taken down their tweets, and I haven't taken this one down. In the midst of a Twitter dialogue led by James Martin, the liberal Catholic priest, or at least liberal on moral and social issues related to sexuality, he's also very pro-life. James Martin had a thing going, and he was noting that the Catholic school had already apologized after this clip came out. And I wrote a post that said, "We can hope the young men repent and change. The March for Life holds out hope for repentance and healing." Now, after writing that, I have been pounded from both the left and the right for writing that post and for leaving it up. I left it up because I said, from my watching of all of these videos, there are a couple of young men in Covington that I would suggest they go talk to their priest about some of their behavior. But by all means, it's not all of them. And by all means, we all completely misjudged the framing of this event as it was presented to the national media by Phillips. And we went through at least a day where the press didn't publish any information that contradicted what appears to be a very flawed narrative that he told originally. So I'm getting it from liberals who are mad at me for saying that the Covington guys may not be the bad guys in this scenario, that the actual people screaming and yelling the most vilest stuff were the black Hebrew Israelites. Caitlin, I believe it's Caitlin Flanagan of the Atlantic Monthly, has a wonderful piece today where she noted very detailed the sequence of who said what to whom. And she noted that the only time the Covington boys reacted with a lot of vengeance or a lot of fire was when the black Hebrew Israelites started yelling homophobic stuff. So there's just all of this information contained in the two-hour video. And the more you dig seeking facts, F-A-C-T-S, the more you look for the facts in this story, the less the facts seem to matter in the aftermath of the discussion. Does that ring true to you? When did you encounter the story?
Well, I encountered it just about the time everybody else did. I did not watch the video. I'm kind of conflict averse. Unless I'm personally involved, then I don't mind having conflict, but I don't like watching other people argue. So it's one of the reasons I wasn't watching football, because that's just my makeup. So I did not watch the video. I don't mind fighting as long as I'm involved, but yeah, watching other people fight is boring to me. But my impressions were all coming from the single images of the smirking face and the MAGA hats and as you say, that very narrow angle that picked up only the side of an old Indian's face, a drum, and a young Catholic schoolboy wearing a red hat. That was all you saw. And it was one into which you could pour any interpretation you liked, and everybody was, very readily.
It was like an ink blot being used by a psychiatrist. What do you think this ink blot looks like? You know, and it, we've had so much interesting commentary about this. The Ross Douthat column today, in which kind of his id argues with his rational self about all this, or I believe this ran yesterday, the Covington Scissors column. I would recommend to listeners that they look that up. It's one of the best things I've read on this. But when you look at the whole 2 hours, you see this particular young man looking scared, looking tense, looking nervous. There's a moment where one of his, a young boy standing near him, like gets yelled at by one of the Indian activists, and the guy starts to answer the Indian, the Native American, back, and the boy in question immediately gives him this laser look and gives him a clear gesture that says, cut it off. Don't argue. I mean, I've thought about it from my own perspective. Even though I lived in Washington all that time, I had not had an encounter with the black Hebrew Israelites, who apparently in some of their spinoffs are really, really radical people. And if you listen to what they had to say, what they were yelling at these young men, a lot of it's horribly vile and vicious. I don't know how I would have responded in that circumstance, let alone if I was 16 or 17, 14, 15 years of age. Now, I will say this, a lot of people, it's all about the hats. I mean, that there's nothing a white person, or probably anybody else, wearing a Trump hat, there's nothing they can do that will get them a hearing as anything other than a racist bigot at this point in American life. I will say this, I think there is a discussion to be held about the role of partisan and party politics in the March for Life. Now, while very few people noted that this year, March for Life, yes, Pence spoke, yes, they played a taped message from Trump, but they also went out of their way this year to include pro-life Democrats on the podium and have them speak, which I thought was positive, but I think maybe they should try a year at the March for Life where there are no politicians on the podium, and that there's nobody up there but women who've endured abortion and ministers who help women and activists who've given their lives to this cause. And if the politicians care enough that they want to come out and march, let them come out and march. They'll probably end up being, you know, interviewed on television, but I don't think there's anything we can do about that. Just try to imagine the scrutiny this march will be under next year. I'm sure that there are a lot of schools that are going to think twice about whether they let their kids come, which I think is tragic.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the March for Life on this Thursday, January the 24th. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. When we come back, more discussion of that and why the media has, up until this year, paid so little attention to the March for Life.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd. What have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the March for Life. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, you were talking before the break about the people who spoke at the March for Life. One of them was kind of phenomenon Ben Shapiro. He made his now famous baby Hitler speech, which was immediately controversial. And I responded via Twitter when I saw that The Hill was covering something about the March for Life, anything about the March for Life. Oh, The Hill finally noticed that there was a March for Life. Why does the media generally pan the March for Life, give it, as I would call it, very muted coverage?
Well, this takes us back into decades of study of this. I'd say there's the reason, and then there's the real reason. On one level, the reason is it's held every year. It's old news. Even though it is very, very, very big old news in terms of its one-day impact on the city, in a typical year, it's far and away the largest demonstration in Washington, D.C. But I would flash back to something that was said years ago by the reader's representative of the Washington Post, who simply noted that one year there was a women's march of another kind, and the Washington Post greeted it with, like, I don't think I'm exaggerating much when I said greeted it with like 5 to 6 open pages of coverage. They literally published a special section for people who were arriving for this women's rights march. It was huge. Then that same year, with a crowd that was about twice as large, the March for Life came into town, and they gave it like a 12-inch story on the Metro front. No advance coverage, one little bitty story, and that's it. And if I remember correctly, basically it's whatever happened at it that was political, the usual thing. And this reader's representative, who was a woman, made a very interesting observation when she simply said, part of the problem here is I don't think we have anybody in our newsroom who knows anybody who came to town for the March for Life. We don't have anybody in this room that's involved in people coming to town for this event. Whereas when the Women's March happened, almost every person in the newsroom knew somebody coming to town or was involved in the march, or they were on the periphery of the subjects. So the newsroom embraced one as an event that everybody in the room believed it was important. And the other event, March for Life, was viewed overwhelmingly as an event that was an annual nuisance. Now, that will affect your coverage. To me, as someone who lived in Washington and went through a lot of March for Lives, I think there are all kinds of interesting stories around the periphery of this event. And while we have the biggest groups that are there are almost always young evangelicals and young Catholics, there are a lot of interesting, smaller networks of supporters on the pro-life issue. And the march is a chance to run into them and hear what they have to say. The Feminist for Life organization would be one example. This, some of the people behind the annual event called I Regret My Abortion, which is basically women telling their stories of what how they felt either coerced into abortion by family or lovers or their job. And often a lot of these stories are told in language that is classic feminism. I was a woman, I was underpowered in this situation, and I was coerced into having to have an abortion. And I regret what happened. And statistically, studies have shown that that's a big part of the reality of abortion. how often have you seen them in the coverage? Every year that I was there, I always went by their section of the demonstration. And you'd watch TV crews walk right past these women and never talk to them. When I would argue that they're one of the most important and representative voices at the event. I wrote my column this week for Universal Press on an event that I had already decided to write about before the Covington thing blew up. I wrote my column on a very small but important meeting of United Methodists, a church that has gone from being one of the strongest supporters of abortion rights to a church, the second largest Protestant body in America, that is like just inches away now from a uniformly pro-life position. Just 2 years ago, they cut ties to the Coalition for Reproductive Rights, the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Rights. They failed to retain a resolution in their book of resolutions in favor of Roe v. Wade. And so the Methodists have come a long way in terms of their official pronouncements on this, a long way in terms of changing their stance. Well, the small pro-life movement within Methodism had a prayer meeting, and I wrote my column about why they think abortion is such an important issue. And there are dozens of these events. You never see them in the news.
You point out something here that I think is very important. If only for the religion angle, Terry, the annual March for Life in D.C. is, I think, hands down the largest ecumenical, rightly understood, ecumenical yes. event in America every year. Hands down, yep. just in terms of the pure numbers and the broad cross-section of not only religious opponents of abortion, but non-religious opponents of abortion, too.
Yeah, I pointed out in my column that you have a wide array of religious people. I mean, from the Gay and Lesbians for Life, but then you have atheists affiliated with Humanists for Life who are at the march. And you have Episcopalians for Life. And then, yes, you have the Orthodox for Life. And then you have every conceivable level of Catholic involvement, as well as evangelicals. Evangelicals, I would consider liberal evangelicals, will still be at the March for Life. So, I mean, this is a real chance to break through a lot of stereotypes on one of the most divisive issues in American life. Yet what we saw this year with the Covington story and the Red Hats, yes, the Red Hats, we saw, like, gosh, all of the archetypal stereotypes all turned into dragons, flaming dragons of stereotypes in this one story. And you know it will dominate next year's March for Life no matter what happens. And I think that shows you how divided we are right now on issues related to race and religion and abortion and whatever else. But I kept thinking about one other thing, because remember, this is the same week as the Karen Pence story, where the press goes ballistic over Karen Pence teaching for a perfectly normal evangelical school. And then you have the annual debate about whether to cover March for Life, and then you have the Covington boys. Part of me, I'm not a conspiracy thinker, but we're going to see a lot of attention paid to Christian schools and whether Christian schools are by their very nature negative and unconstructive and divisive and raising up children who can't be tolerant, etc. And in my mind, as someone with a lot of experience in Washington, this is all about Amy Coney Barrett and whether or not there will be another opening on the Supreme Court.
Just for those who aren't kind of in the know, connect the dots there, would you?
Well, I mean, she is a devout Roman Catholic. She is an advocate of Christian higher education. She teaches at Notre Dame. She's a Roman Catholic mother of, what, six children? Two of which are adopted, or is it seven? Large family. And this is the woman that famously, during her hearing to get onto a major federal court, we had a senator ask her very specific questions about her Catholic beliefs. And then the senator said, well, let's face it, the dogma lives loudly in you. And if you think Kavanaugh was bad, and you think Covington Schools was bad as a media explosion, hang on. if there is another opening on the Supreme Court and Amy Coney Barrett, a Roman Catholic, traditional conservative with some interesting parts of her background, but they're not highly unusual, wait for the explosion that's coming next. And it is not going to be fun. Part of me wants to say that based after Covington, she may literally look at her family and say, I can't afford to be nominated for the U.S. Supreme Court. This would be too much for my family. And if that's the case, all of the hubbub and furor over Covington was some kind of success for the cultural and religious left.
Finally, Terry, what do you make of the inevitable counterreaction to all of this, especially as a journalist, because there are many whom I deeply respect in journalism who are saying, look, this is just the track record of journalism that jumps at a story, writes the story, then later gets the facts straight.
Oh, I've lost readers this week because I defended journalism and still saying that although I don't like what happened, I understand why it happened, and I think it's bad that it happened, but journalism remains important. And like I said, I didn't pull my tweet down, and I don't think that the Covington guys are completely without some concerns about their behavior. No, this was not a good week to defend journalism. And it built up resentments against journalism. That takes us right back to my talk at the Issues Etc. conference a year and a half ago now. The biggest problem we have right now is that no one in America is consuming information from the center of the spectrum or information that allows them to understand how the other sides of issues think, feel, and what their logic is. This was a week that drove us even further apart. As David Brooks said, the tail of digital media wagged the dog, and the dog is in worse shape after this week than even before, and I didn't know if that was possible.
Finally then, Terry, next year's March for Life, you said just wait and see what the coverage is like. Will there be better, more thorough coverage of the March for Life as a result of the controversy that it unwittingly gave birth to this year in the media?
I think it will lead to some people being careful. But then again, we have no idea what will happen in American politics in the next year. Things could get worse. We could have other instances. Like I said, if we have an opening on the Supreme Court, the level of rhetoric and warfare over it, especially if it's a conservative woman replacing the archetypal liberal woman on the court in Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, the movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is up for an Academy Award. I would almost be willing to bet you an extremely large stake pre-Lent that the Ruth Bader Ginsburg docudrama will win. Do you think we'll have some politics at the Oscars this year surrounding that film? You think? And if she shows up for the award, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg shows up at the Oscars, I'm just trying to predict the media storm. So I'm going to beg off that question, for the simple reason that I have no idea what America will be living in by then.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Very glad to be here.
When we come back, Elaine Donnelly joins us, founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. We're going to talk with her about the Supreme Court's ruling in favor of the president's partial ban on transgenders in the military.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel, from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio? For more information, contact Lynn at 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. in 2019. Call Lynn today, 618-223-8385. Thanks for your support.
Interested in missions and evangelism? You won't want to miss the January issue of The Lutheran Witness. Learn how the Apostles' Creed informs personal evangelism. Get to know Theodore Nather, the first overseas LCMS missionary. Hear about how one church planter is sharing the gospel in an unreached corner of Albuquerque and discover anew what it truly means to be Lutheran and unashamed. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Visiting Concordia University Chicago is a great way to open up your world. Tour our beautiful 40-acre campus. Hear from current students about why they chose Concordia Chicago. Discover more than 70 degree programs and learn about financial aid and generous scholarship opportunities. Attend our February 18th visit day for high school and transfer students. Register today at cuchicago.edu/visit.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you need a home mortgage, car, or student loan in 2019? Check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union. During January, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Christ Community International. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.